Good morning and welcome back to Nachiyomi. Today we are going to be learning together Perek Hey, the fifth chapter of Megillas Koheles. Our Perek is made up of 19 psukim, and we can look at it basically in two main sections. The first section is on the theme of fearing Hashem, fearing Elohim, and it is really coming from the 17th and last pasuk of Perek Dalad, all the way through Perek Hey here to pasuk Zion. Okay, so that's really the grouping. Naturally, the prakim, the way that the chapters were divided, was not a Jewish introduction, and therefore is less important or significant thematically. So let's look at this section over here. It's from Perek Dalet Pasuk Yud Zion through Perek Hei Pasuk Zion. And in this section, the main idea is fearing Hashem. You'll see the idea of God's powerful, powerfulness, His omniscience, being a significant factor in this Perek. So the first thing that we're told is in the end of the last parak is don't act rashly. Don't do things. You know, the first step is don't act like a fool. Shmor raglocha kasher telecha beis Elokim v'karav lishma mitasa kselim zevach ki einam yodim das osra. Don't, when you go to God's house, be very careful. Don't act rashly. The next step for Pesukim Aleph to Beis is that he says al tava al picho v'libcha yemar lo hetzi davar lifnei Elokim. Don't speak too much in front of Hashem. Be careful what you say in front of Hashem. Ki Elokim Hashemayim, God is in heavens. You're on the ground. Your matters, your words should be few. The next step, the third step of this speech is Psukim Gimel to Hay. In our parak is be careful about making nedarim, making commitments. Kashatido nedel Elokim, alta acher l'shalmoy. If you make a commitment, don't ever be late when it comes to paying it back for God. And you know what? It's actually better. It's better not to make a commitment than making a commitment and not being able to fulfill that commitment. Be very careful, again, circumspect with the way we speak in front of Hashem. And finally, the last two psukim vav to Zion in the section are about fearing Hashem and not denying His hashkacha. When a person sees all kinds of things happening, a person sees gezel mishpat v'tzedek, don't get confused or worried about this. Hashem is above all of this, and you're seeing the whole system. There's a lot of the sense of Hashem's power, a lot of the sense of the humility of the human race, the human species. So trying to understand our contextualization in the greater world. A few points to ponder in this section before we move on to the second and last section of our parak. And that is, what is this relationship between words and Hashem? Why is words so significant, certainly in the first part of the section? Ibn Ezra says this is the acknowledgement of the Hashkacha Pratis of Hashem, of Hashem's very specific divine providence. Because if a person is, so to speak, thinks that Hashem created the world, but Hashem is not so involved in the world, then I can really say or do what I want. I mean, after all, it's just words, right? Is Hashem really caring what I'm talking about at the coffee station at work? Does He really care? And the answer is yes, He does, because Hashem is everywhere. Hashem is omniscient. Hashem is throughout all history, in all time, in all place. And what you say makes a very big difference. So therefore, understand that. Therefore, you dvarecha mu'atim, be careful what you say. That's what Ibn Ezra says. So this is actually a function of hashkacha, of Hashem's providence, more than it is about your speech. The Ibn Ezra goes so far as to say the next step, that he says, maybe this is actually referring not just to speech, we'll call it casual speech, but rather holy speech. So we're talking about davening. And when it comes to davening, Ibn Ezra says, it's important that a person knows what they're saying. It's important that a person acts respectfully during their davening, doesn't talk, doesn't get distracted, doesn't leave early and come late. A person needs to have a certain sense of gravity when dealing with Hashem, and therefore this is relating not to our mundane, regular pedestrian speech during the rest of the day, it's related to our speech to Hashem. Another possibility over here is the Metzudah. The Metzudah says, don't complain about Hashem. What are the words? Don't use your words to complain about Hashem, because you don't understand the divine perspective. You're on the earth, Hashem is in the heaven. He's in the control tower, and you are on the runway. Don't think that you know what's going on, because on the runway, it looks different. That's what the Metzudah says. So these are three different ways of looking at the words, and why words are so significant when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when it comes to relating to the divine. Let's move on to the next point to ponder. What is this business about dreams? You'll see in Pasuk Beis, it appears, and again, it appears just a few Pesukim later in Pasuk Vav. The idea of Ki Beroi Ki Vav, Chalom Beroi Vinyan, There's many things in dreams. Why is dreams being used over here? So Talumas Chachama, one of the Pirushim on Sefer Koheles, Megillas Koheles, says that dreams are illusory. So when we see some things, you can't trust what you're seeing in a dream. So in a certain sense, sometimes we're daydreaming. We're looking around and we see illusions which delude us into thinking that it's one way when really in fact it is another way. So be very careful before coming to conclusions about judging how Hashem is operating this world. Understand that you are also in a dream. There's certain things which look really real, but you don't really know what's actually going on. Rav Mordechai Zer Kavod explains that a dream also has many unnecessary details, which is why it's compared to the kol kisil, the voice of the fool, Berov Devarim, which has so many things, so many extra stuff. You know, sometimes when you're having a conversation with somebody, they just can't get to the point. That, you know, so what is it that you're proposing? What is it that you want to convey? And they can't get there because there's so many distractions and there's a detour on a detour and a tangent upon a tangent. And so that's sometimes be careful. This is also relating back, says Rav Zer Kavod, the idea of using your words carefully. Not like a dream where you have all kinds of kaleidoscopes of colors and ideas. You know, Abraham Lincoln is quoted as saying, better to remain silent and be thought a fool than speak and to remove all doubt. That's what's being said over here. Be careful, be wise. You're under the jurisdiction of Hashem. And it is this section's capstone is Pasuk Vav, in Pasuk Zayin, in which that if you see Im Oshek Rosh VeGezel Mishpat VeTzedek Tira, you see there's anarchy, you see there's injustice in the world, and you start saying, Al Tit Malachevitz, don't get too concerned about it. Ki Govoya Me'al Govoya Shomer, Hashem, who's the God, is above it all. He's waiting, says Rashi, for the full picture to be woven together to take and to apply justice. Don't think that you should be complaining and expressing your displeasure with the situation because you're on the runway, you don't know what's going on, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's got it covered. So that seems to be the general perspective of this section. It's a very humbling section. We move to the second section of our Perek, which runs from Sukkim Ches in Perek Hay, and it actually really goes all the way through Perek Vov Pasuk Test, but we're not going to focus on that second part of our section. We're going to look at the first part of this new section, which is about the problems of running after money. We're going to look at it in three steps. Step number one is Pasuk Ches to Yud Aleph. In this section, it talks about the importance of working in the field as opposed to seeking money. So you look at Pasuk Ches versus Pasuk Tes, that's the exact contrast. V'yisron eretz b'kol, b'kol hu melech la'sodev ne'evadek, you know, everybody needs, even the king needs, to work in the field. O'ev kesev lo'yis b'kesev, but those who love silver will never be satiated by silver. And there's a few more expressions of this idea, that there's going to be real satiation in the field, whereas when it comes to money seeking, you're not going to feel so good. This is the first micro section. Then the next micro section is from Sukkim Yud Beis to Tes Zion about riches kept for the evil of the owner. And this is not talking about what we saw beforehand in Koheles, where there's a person who amasses all this wealth and suffers and scrimps and saves to be able to give it to their children, and then their child, you know, loses it all. This is where the person scrimps and saves in their own life, they lose it. That's what seems to be over here. And you see, he calls this, that this is a very terrible thing, a choli ra'ah. It's ra'ah chole, it's a terrible, sickly vision he sees. And finally, the last micro step in this section is Psukim Yud Zayin to Yud Tes, in which he talks about the praise to somebody who's happy with his lot. Hine yasher ra'isi a'anim, toi vasher yofe, le'chol v'lishtois, v'liris tova b'cholam oloi, she'emot ha'chashe ha'shemes, mispe yimei chayov. A person should really enjoy eating and enjoy drinking for all the good they were given to him, Hashem nasan elokim ki hu chelkoi, which is given to him because of what Hashem wants him to have. Just a few points to point on each of these three micro steps. In the first section, I was talking about the field, working in the field, being better than just looking for money. This is an important idea, psychologically speaking. Dr. Martin Seligman, in one of the founding fathers of positive psychology, has a book called Authentic Happiness, which is later unfollowed by a book called Flourish. in which it talks about the difference between gratifications and pleasures. We both say, I like things in the world, but not all I likes are the same. So I can say, I like the smell of coffee. I like the taste of lasagna. I like hearing rain on a tin roof. Those are pleasures. Those are raw. They trigger certain physical or emotional trigger spots that give me raw pleasure. Then there's a gratification. I like to ride a bike. I like to read a book. I like to go on a hike. Now, while you're in the middle of it, it's not necessarily pleasurable, right? You're sweating and it's hard and it requires effort. But after the effort, it's gratifying because of the effort invested. And in society today, in generally, we are cutting out gratifications to replace them with pleasures, right? So a person will always, almost always, choose to watch a movie rather than read a book. A movie you're not involved in any necessarily cognitive thought process or invested in the energy, but you'll do that, but you feel much less after watching a movie than actually doing a book, because reading a book requires effort. You'll much rather, you know, so to speak, sit on the swing drinking martini than you will go on a bike ride, even though the bike ride will give you more gratification afterwards, which is, he argues, is one of the reasons why depression rates in society, clinical depression rates, are in fact escalating. Just fascinating. So the idea of the investment, what Coelho seems to be saying, long before we got these words were invested in English to describe this, is it's better to be involved in the field, to be working, than to necessarily just be accumulating wealth, which is you know, so to speak, maybe even today we can think about in the thought industry today, where you're actually doing less with your hands, you're doing less to produce. There's much more to be said about actual production itself. Rav Soloveitchik also adds an interesting point over here, and he talks about in an essay called Sacred and Profane, he has a subsection called Place Consciousness, and he talks about the difference between the nomad and the agriculturalist, the farmer. And he talks about how the nomad goes from place to place and is essentially a virus. He goes and he takes his sheep here and he drains the resources and he moves on without any investment. The landowner is a person who has to buy the land and he has to deal with the floods and the hurricanes and the droughts and the rains and all the problems that can happen there. But at the same time, he's invested in a place, he's invested in real estate, he's invested in something which he has to be committed to, whether it be in relationships, whether it be in religion. And this is what's happening over here, is that perhaps what Coelho is saying, it's better to have a field, it's better to have an investment than necessarily just to be transient and to be a nomad, taking for the best of things as long as they're giving you goodness. The second micro section that we looked at over here was the idea of the riches, right? So how riches which are bad for the owner. How are riches bad for the owner? It seems from the pshat of the psukim, in the second little micro section here, that it's because he loses them, right? So he works, and just before he's able to bequeath it to his or her children, that it's gone. Something happens. Why? What's happening over here? So Rashi says it's actually not just a correlation, it's causative. That means to say that a lot of times when people get a lot of riches, they become conceited. Once they become conceited, he gives an example like Korach, ultimately they create their own downfall, which is a tragedy. And the Maturah says, no, there's another causation over here, which is when you get a lot of riches, a lot of times that provokes jealousy. When that provokes jealousy, people do all kinds of terrible things to get the riches away from you, and ultimately results in terrible endings. So again, these are where the riches are not just disappearing, but the riches are actually the cause of the loss itself. Finally, the last section, which is something which is really very powerful, Psukim Yud Zayin to Yud Tes, just appreciate that section, that micro section. It is something which is worthwhile thinking about. A lot of people attribute this idea in Koheles to be the idea which is going to be later called in history Carpe Diem, seizing the day, taking advantage of time, eat, be drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. However, if you analyze Carpe Diem is, in fact, comes from a deep sense, a deep-seated sense of hopelessness, meaning life means nothing. Tomorrow I'm going to grow old. I'm going to lose my youth, my looks, my verve. So you know what? Let's just do whatever we want today, because, you know, after all, we're all going to, you know, lose out. So let's just have as much pleasure as we possibly can right now. That's where Carpe Diem comes from. So although it is very much engaged in the moment, it's engaged in the moment out of a deep sense of loss, a deep sense of hopelessness. Whereas what Koheles is proposing is actually the opposite of this. Because of the recognition, that Hashem gives you things, and sometimes those things are good and sometimes those things are bad, which is the topic of this parak, it's important to appreciate all of them as they arrive, to eat and drink and appreciate every day. This actually is coming from a deep-seated sense of meaning and purpose, realizing that after looking and realizing that we are lowly, we are human beings, we don't see the full picture, therefore every day that we're receiving, every day that we're getting is in effect something which HaKadosh Baruch Hu has specifically choreographed that it should be on our plate, therefore enjoy it. So that's exactly the opposite of Carpe Diem, although in action it looks like the same. With this, we close Perek Hey, and we'll finish this section about the disgrace after running after money as we enter Perek Vav. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.